If you need to record a podcast remotely, Riverside.fm is the place to do it. Alex and I have been making Two Dudes Watch Cartoons remotely across states, pretty much across the continental U.S. for 3 years now. We've tried several things, and this is what works best, honestly.
Zoom turned out terrible. We used a couple other ones that we paid for that turned out terrible.
You're looking at the interface right now. I think I'm doing the screen record correctly.
Riverside has made doing this podcast as easy as possible. Riverside FM.
Head to the link in our bio to get started. That's riverside.fm.
Today.
Two dudes watching cartoons. Welcome back to Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, the podcast where two dudes, that is us, watch cartoons. My name's Evan.
And my name is Alex, and happy holidays. Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays. Christmas, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year,
happy
Kwanzaa,
Christmas,
all
Alex.
Of them. Woo! Happy, yeah. thanks for joining us again. We got a fun one today. We got an interesting one today. Hot off the presses. Hayao Miyazaki's last ever film, so
latest
a dedication.
Last film.
I've learned this is now his third last film, or maybe second, excuse me. I'm coming fresh off research, but as we know, I know why I think it's third, because he's already announced he's working on another movie. We're talking today about The Boy and the Heron. I always want to say the blue heron, but it's not even a blue heron, even though it's a gray heron.
Before we dig any further, first bit of news. Opening weekend of the U.S. theatrical release for The Boy and the Heron was this past weekend. And guess what?
What?
For the first time ever, Hayao Miyazaki's U.S. debut was number one at the box office with a debut of $12.9 million. That's a first for Hayao Miyazaki in his storied career.
You know what that means for the folks at
congratulations.
Home? He beat Disney. Yeah. He did it. He beat
he
Disney
beat
this week.
Disney. Mm-hmm. He beat Wish. He beat Trolls.
Yeah. Well, congrats. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. Well, it's a big deal, actually. It really is.
Let me run through a quick synopsis. I feel like there's a decent amount to dig into. This is a layered film.
We're going to either be here 30 minutes or 6 hours. I'm not exactly sure how it's going to go.
You just watched it yesterday.
Yeah, I watched it yesterday, and I'm really glad we waited a day. Oftentimes, I will come in hot, maybe 30, 40 minutes off of finishing something. And I think if I had done that yesterday, this could have been a totally different podcast. This one, which I think is a sign of a really good movie, though, has had me thinking for like 24 hours straight about it. And I love that. I love that in a film. Because when I walked out, I said, that was good, not great. There was parts I was like, meh, take it or leave it. As I've been sitting with it, me and Nikki find ourselves where we're like, oh yeah, in that one part, we like just bring it up randomly. We've been talking about it ever since we saw it, which I love. So I have a higher opinion on it now than I did even hours ago.
Good. I feel like that day, that review embargo on our pod, it's got to account for at least a half star, I'm calling it, from you.
Oh, no. No. You take the over there. You know, you're 100% right.
All right, real quickly, this is the synopsis on Letterboxd. The Boy and the Heron 2023 film. While the Second World War rages, the teenage Mahito, haunted by his mother's tragic death, is relocated from Tokyo to the serene rural home of his new stepmother, Natsuko, a woman who bears a striking resemblance to the boy's mother. As he tries to adjust, this strange new world grows even stranger, following the appearance of a persistent gray heron who perplexes and bedevils Mahito, dubbing him the long-awaited one.
We're jumping right into it. Spoilers all throughout this whole thing. Go see the movie. It's really fantastic. It is probably not like anything you're going to have seen the rest of this year. I think, and that's a positive thing. Why were they dancing around it being his aunt the whole time? Was it like a taboo that his father was marrying his widow's sister?
I don't know that it's necessarily a taboo. The way I'm choosing to interpret it is maybe we're experiencing that revelation as Mahito does, sort of.
You think he didn't know? Okay.
You know, he's a kid at that point.
Yeah.
Twitter and Facebook and profiles to be reading up on. It's the 40s.
You would think he would know who his aunt is, but okay, we'll go with it. Because they were dancing around it, but I was like, pretty sure this is his aunt. I was like, yeah, I think the dad's hooking up with her now. Because at first I thought they were just staying there, but then there was the scene where their feet get real close and Mahito's watching under the banister.
Yeah,
I was like, they're making out. I know they are.
They're making out. Yeah. Well, there's like the little helper ladies around the house that he moves into, and they mention it.
Maybe they mentioned that they know Mahito's mother very well, and so that was what I also thought was another hint that they were sisters.
Before we dig into this further, I got to talk a little bit about my viewing experience.
Please.
I went to an early access premiere, so this was maybe last Thursday or Wednesday. Got to see it before this is also going to be a first for the pod. You watched the dub with the star-studded cast. And I've watched the subbed version, and I would love to go back and watch the dub, but I just did not have time to get around to it today. But I went to a local theater. I wanted to see it on a big screen because, you know, with these phenomenal directors like Scorsese and Miyazaki, like as I'm becoming an adult, and they're nearing the end of their, you know, careers in a way. This is like the first opportunity that I've had to see Miyazaki on an IMAX in its theatrical release. So, I mean, not the first opportunity, but like, I don't know, as an adult, I don't know. First time I've consciously chosen to, but I saw it on an IMAX screen or an IMAX screen at a local theater, or at least I thought that's what I was getting tickets for because that's what it had that. But then it also said Skybox. And so this theater... This theater has the regular, you know, IMAX like seating.
Okay.
And then a skybox, which I had to go upstairs to get into. I had to ask the people how to get there. They direct me to it. I find it just fine. I walk into a tiny, tiny room that's on the second floor behind what the normal seating or above the very, you know, the very top.
Are you above the projector?
I'm probably in line. I'm to the left of the projector, I'm assuming.
Okay.
And so imagine watching a movie from the furthest back left corner, and that's me from up top, a perspective I've never seen a movie from before. And also, because it's the second floor, I'm guessing for safety reasons, there is glass. There's window panes.
You were watching it through the window.
I was watching it through a window pane.
Doc,
at a distance that may as well not have been IMAX at all because it just looked like a TV screen from that distance.
You fucked up.
And there was three panes on this window, so there were two kind of vertical lines going through. Luckily, I was seated enough to where one was like only not cutting off, but like only sectioning off like the right third of the screen for me. So
wow, okay,
not an ideal experience.
Well, let me tell you another thing. I'm gonna keep pitching to you after this experience to go see it again. The voice acting of the English dub was fantastic. Specifically, our boy Rob Pat, he was amazing. Mm-hmm. He was so good because it was really like Robert Pattinson doing his best Willem Dafoe almost. And it was. And they're friends now, so it was just great. It was really good, and you wouldn't even know that it was him if it literally didn't say it. You would have no idea that it's him. He He's great. And the Heron, what a character. Well, we'll get into it, but like, I just love that he's at a point in his career. Well, I guess not. He's playing Batman, like the biggest character, but like, he's just.
But he's still being weird about it.
He's still being weird.
Yeah. And I love that.
I really appreciate it. I really appreciate that from him.
In a time where he could be doing pretty boy roles, he chooses just to be a little freak. Love it.
He could have. Yeah, no, you're right. And I just didn't know he was going to be such like a people's champion back when he was Edward. You know what I mean? I had no idea that he was so cool. Yeah. I didn't know he was chill like that. Willem Dafoe gave a chilling performance. Christian Bale was really good. I should know, but I don't. Mojito's a drink. Mojito's voice actor was really good. The girl that's in The Boys, Karen
Fukuhara,
she was great. They knocked it out of the park. Who also was great was Florence Pugh as the old lady / young one in the underworld.
Kiriko.
Voice
both the old and young versions?
She voiced both the old and the young, and she killed them.
That's awesome. I don't know the voice actor's last name, but I think the English voice actor for Mojito was Luca something.
Yeah, because it made me think of Pixar Luca. Mm. Yeah, no, it 100% is.
I'm cutting in some news. Luca turning red I think those
Soul.
Two.
Soul
are getting a theatrical release in 2024 ahead of Inside Out 2.
As they deserve.
I'd see Luca again. Turning Red,
I'd watch it on Disney Plus again.
Yeah.
I would see Luca in theaters. You know what? I would probably see Soul in theaters too, because.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it. And I only heard amazing things. I know. It's so bad. I don't know how it escaped me, but I just haven't seen it. It was that weird time. It was a weird time.
It was a strange time. Okay. I mean, yeah, I'm very interested to see the dub version. I probably won't get around to it.
Yeah, not anytime
soon.
Until
it comes around on streaming.
Okay. So. We'll just kind of go beat by beat, and we can kind of talk about the characters, but there is, I'm going to say it again, it's Mojito. Mm-hmm. Mojito is our main character. He's a boy who, in the very opening scene of the movie, we start off tragically, him and his dad realize the hospital is on fire, has been bombed, is on fire, some sort of act of war, and during World War II, and that's where his mother has been. She's sick. And by the time they get there, it's too late. But what we get is this amazing, beautiful animated scene that I like forgot was animated at times. There was several points in the movie, where, especially when there was no people, I like forgot I was watching an animated movie. It was really crazy.
Yeah, Mojito is running towards the hospital, sort of in this haze. You know, but it's beautifully interpreted and animated where, like, he's running through this crowd. You can see him very clearly, but everything else is sort of grayed out, blurry, foggy, smoky. It's this dreamlike state it's just really a sight to take in. You know, it kind
there's
of
fire
reminds
everywhere.
Me of,
there's
yeah,
people
a little
trying
bit
to put
of
it out.
Grave of the Fireflies. Not that dream sequence, but just, like, the note we start off on was,
yeah.
You know. And I just know I'm like too superhero brained because I was like watching that. It's like he's in the Speed Force.
He's gonna go back in time and save his mother.
Which?
That is really funny. You were like, man, he broke the sound, but he did it. He's in the Speed Force. He's totally. But what the Speed Force, as you're putting it, what it actually is the flames that are all around him. And it's a really interesting visual metaphor throughout the film, the whole flames of it. But at first, he's very overwhelmed, terrified, scared of these flames. So we get that visually. One thing, my research today, and, you know, we've talked about this is our fourth Ghibli film. I know, isn't that crazy? I don't know if we've discussed this, so if we have, I'm sorry. This is for anyone new, I guess. Hayao Miyazaki's mother, when he was a child, had tuberculosis, and she was bedridden for most of his childhood. Mm-hmm. And so he was always, as a child, you know, kind of plagued with the thought of, like, what if my mother dies? Like, what if mom's about to die? And I think for a child, that is almost worse, going through a long period of time thinking that she's going to die and seeing her in, like, a near-death state, almost mm-hmm. than, like, a sudden death. Because, like, I feel like in his films, there's always this theme or metaphor of mortality, life, death. And yeah. I just think that is, like, so clearly impacted by a childhood where he's thinking about death way more than probably any other child should be.
Yeah. Obviously, I haven't seen his whole body of work, but from what I'm reading about this film, this is, like, as autobiographical as you can get. His family was relocated from Tokyo mm-hmm. to the countryside during the Second World War. And there are some
His
other
father also makes planes, just like which Christian Bale's character.
The Porco Rosso, like, inspirations. It all ties in with this movie, which is interesting to learn after the fact. You don't really need it going in. There is a lot to dissect in this film. Mm-hmm. But I almost want to make the point of, like, I'm reading through a Reddit thread of, like, people's reactions to the movie, and they're like, I didn't get this, I didn't get that. And I think it's more, like, that's, like, I think that's a symptom of the modern way we experience and talk about movies, is, like, it's the MCU way. It's like, I didn't get this, I didn't, like, it's more about the emotional arc and the beats in the film and, like, themes rather than it being a movie or a world, a universe mm-hmm. that all makes coherent sense. I'm
there's
sure
a lot
it does
of,
in retrospect, but
there's a lot of illogical rules in the universe. There's a lot mm-hmm. of magical explain what have yous. And like you said, that's not the point of it. You're not going to get like a Doctor Strange where they're like, well, magic works like this. That's no, I'm agreeing with you. I agree completely. Yeah. And so it's, but it's part of it because like you said, it's used to represent more, to represent a message, a theme, a thing. So like you said, it's very autobiographical. There's a lot of parts of his life of Mojito. I said it wrong, didn't I? I'm so sorry. All right. There's a lot of parts of his life that are autobiographical in that, but there's also a lot of it that he has said in interviews, he's making this for his grandchild, his grandson. And so a lot of it is represented, I think, in just the embodiment of youth, the next generation of that sort of the kid is grappling. Wow, we're just diving right in. Throughout the movie, the kid is really grappling with the malice in the world, the evil of the world, if you will, mm-hmm. and the harsh things that humans can do to each other, the harsh things that he does to himself. And he is really, and the grief of his mother passing, he's really trying to deal with all these emotions, and he gets sucked into a world where he does get a little bit of closure with his mother, where he does get the chance to come to terms with reality, if you will. God, mm-hmm. the movie's fantastic. Like I said, leaving it, I was like a lot of Redditors where I was like, I didn't really get some of it. But by the time I've started piecing some of the puzzle together, I like want to sob. It's so beautiful. You know what I'm saying? It's really strong stuff.
And I think this is one that will only benefit from rewatches. Like there's so much I want to see again.
Yes.
Also, pull the classic me move. There was like a small couple minute section where I dozed off a little bit.
Oh, all right. All right.
My days are getting long.
No
fault
know what,
of the
though?
Movies.
I am not a hypocrite, a man of my word. I fell asleep for a second too. Nikki looked over at me and was like, are you sleeping? And I go, no. And then I had to stay wide awake for the rest of the movie. It was the water scene. It was really dragged on and it was beautiful and it was so peaceful and the music
where she
was great.
Melts or
oh,
where
no.
Sailing?
Where they're sailing. They're sailing where he's sailing with the young Florence Pugh. Okay.
All right, and maybe we'll be able to fill in each
we can fill in each other's
bottles.
Gaps.
So
no fault of the movie.
Yeah.
I was stoned.
Very much a fault of the Skybox viewing experience because I may as well have not been I may as well, right, as Gideon said
this
last
time. This is what I hate about
I may
the
as well
skybox.
Have been watching it.
This is what I fucking
over
hate about
shoulder.
That. I've never seen the skybox in my life. I've never sat there, but all that is to me is corporate greed. Oh, how can we squeeze 10 more fucking seats in here?
It's literally 10. And then at the end of the film,
nuts.
At the end of the film, I walked, you know, I was in the back row of these two rows in the skybox. I like walked down the steps to get to the door for the exit. I look over, plenty of seating.
Son of a bitch, you didn't check? You didn't even look.
It wasn't on that section wasn't on sale online.
Oh,
I don't know if
oh,
it was
I
like
see,
for
I
a
see. You messed up
group,
somewhere,
segment
but that's
of people.
Fine. You had a should group on.
I wanted so I go to AMC.
Is it
Stub
completely
Hub.
Sealed off? Is it meant for like a party of people?
Maybe
where they could be like
yeah, I guess, but
I hate it still. I hate it nonetheless.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
Well, movie theater was... all right, old man, I got more ranting in me. Movie theater
it.
Etiquette is at an all-time low.
All-time low.
We
Blank,
were in the movies
not in my fucking house.
Oh my god, dude, we were in the movies and someone came in from the bathroom or late, I don't fucking know. And they turned their flashlight on to walk up the aisle. And this was not an old man. This was a child. And I have never glared at someone so disgustingly. But they might have been able to see my face because they had a flashlight. But I just, and people's phones go off and they take forever to turn it in. And they're on their phones. Like, what is going on?
All right, while we're on the topic, movie theaters that serve food right to your seat, in or out?
I'm out. I don't like it.
Yeah. What a fucking disruptive thing.
Oh, it's like, so disruptive. And the one time I did it was for Oppenheimer, and I was so hungry because just how the schedule worked. So I ordered a pizza, and I thought I was going to, like, some places you can get it before you go in and you just do it. And they're like, oh, we'll bring it to your seat. They didn't bring it. They never brought it. And because I was near the entrance, so every time a food came in, I was like, oh, no, not mine. And fucking they never came. So I had to leave and be like, hey, I never got my pizza. And they're like, what's your name? I'm like, Alex. They're like, oh, here it is. And it was cold. And I was livid. I'm out on it so hard.
All right.
Make
that's
movie theaters again.
Yeah. Here's my other hot take about movie theaters, the current movie theater experience. Reclining chairs.
I get the out on them. There is a theater. I have two theaters I'm close to. Sometimes I go to the other one because I just like the old school movie experience, no recliner.
For sure. It's not that I disagree with them in theory. They just don't have enough lumbar support for me personally to be comfortable at all. I need more lumbar support. Yeah, it's not comfortable.
Oh, I have no problem with them. I honestly, though, if I'm being honest and it's so bad, I love putting my feet up on the seat in front of me. It's a time-old tradition of mine. I love doing it. I'm so comfy that way.
But then there's also theaters where if you're fully reclined and you're like towards the middle or back,
I never
sometimes there's railings. Okay.
Never fully recline. I'm a feet out at most guy. I'm 90. Yeah. I'm like a 90 degree angle when I'm in those recliners.
Okay.
You go more
that's
and
respectable.
You're respectable. Any more and you're asleep. Your eyes are drifting too often.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just saying it could be improved for me personally. So anyways, Mahito.
Mahito goes to the countryside. And in the weirdest, maybe it wasn't as weird in the dub, but she goes, I'm going to be your new mother. I was like, what the fuck? You don't say that to a child, I feel like. Maybe there's a cultural thing I'm missing, which is totally possible. But that was so, I was like, no way. And he like bowed. He was like, yes, of course.
I mean, she seems perfectly nice. And
she's got a baby.
They're, oh yeah, she is pregnant when we first meet her.
It's a big plot point.
His dad
is the
kind
dad
of a,
the dad?
A ham. I would hope so. I hope his new stepmother's not just.
Well, I don't know. There was no explanation of it. And like, this was Mahito's first time meeting her, but she's clearly a couple months pregnant. Like, so the dad's just been sneaking off to see her? I don't know. But that's okay. That's okay. We don't need to know. Because they're all heir, bloodline. That's all we need to know.
But we do see his little brother at the end.
We do. It was really
cute. Kid at the bottom of the staircase.
It was really cute. It was only the second cutest thing in the movie, though. Well, do you know the first one?
No, I don't.
You don't know the first? Oh,
the floaty guys.
Yeah, the Wari Wari. Yeah, of course. They were the fucking cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Classic Miyazaki little sprite characters. So Mahito is settling into his new home, new family dynamic, goes to a new school.
Oh, yeah.
Gets beat up.
Isn't he sticking up for a kid that's getting beat up, and then he gets beat up? And then he was like, I'm not going to school anymore, I guess. And he fucking domed himself. I hit my ring light. I was going to impersonate it. I was like, what's he doing?
And that's the thing with Miyazaki. It's all of his films, they have like a little bit of that dark edge, but on the whole are like wholesome and like they, without veering into dark, they have that malice within them, you know?
They do.
But they never have true evil in them. And we see that.
But isn't that just human nature? We all do bad things. We all have some malice, some envy, some wrath, whatever. But we're not evil because of it.
Yeah. And like with any of his films, there's the antagonists are not villains.
Mm.
I admire that so much about his work, because a lazier storyteller would say,
oh, well, they're evil.
They're evil. That's the Parakeet King. He's trying to take over. You got to grab the box or the stone and go fight him or some shit like that.
Yeah, but the Parakeet King is just doing right by his people. Mm-hmm. There was a ton of birds in this movie. There's heron, there's a pelicans, there's the parakeets. And I really think, upon learning what I've learned, this has to be a relation to, like, his love of flying in planes, right? Like, the bird represents that freedom, that flight, and it's something that's present in all his movies in some form, is this this idea of flight and kind of what it represents to him.
Yeah, and so we meet the first bird that we meet is the titular heron. So he's at this new home out in the countryside.
What did you think of it? Before we get into it, overall impressions, what did you think of the heron?
I thought he was great. So the chunk that I missed is is shortly after the heron is revealed as like the guy with the schnoz in the costume.
Danny DeVito.
After we meet his sort of like human form when they are at Himi's house for the first time.
Okay.
So like that, and then like when I was coming back in, the parakeets were bad guys. I was like, where did they come from?
So they were going to the engineer's house looking for, I gotcha. They thought that's where Nezuko could be. Yeah. Okay. So you caught the part then where only Mahito could close the hole because he's the one who made it.
I missed that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that he's the only one, and he couldn't fly with that hole in his beak. So that's why they had to plug it up.
Gotcha.
But so that's why the heron kind of comes back, because he's the only one that can plug it. He was honestly the most confusing character of it all to me, because he has no clear motives. At one point, you may have been asleep for this then, if they're making the little thing, he plugs it up and then he's like, all right, so now we go find her. He goes, one thing you should know is we are not friends or foe. And I was like, whoa, what, dude? And he was like about to take off and just leave him alone, but he couldn't. Okay. It wasn't fit fully. And so I was like, what is his whole purpose in the story
is his
here?
Game?
What is what is going on here? Because eventually he does end up helping, but it's really, and you know, the whole thing of the heron, the beautiful gray heron, and as it gets more and more grotesque, and then it finally unveils himself to be the stubby little short Danny DeVito looking guy with the schnoz. He, it's got to be some sort of representation of like the beauty of these worlds. Kind of like we're talking about how the worlds have these, the movies and worlds that he has have these beauty and optimism to them. But when you kind of peel it back, there is that gross little dark malice underside to it.
Yeah, or is it that the more we personify these beautiful things in nature, inherently making them more human, the uglier they become.
The uglier they become. That's good, too.
I'm just recalling a line where I sort of nodded off was when he's like, there's talking with Hemi at the table, and he's like, and she like kind of tests him, and she's like, herons never lie. Is that true or something?
They both go, no, yes.
So he leads Mahito. He's kind of pestering Mahito in the real world. And
it's like a messenger more than anything.
A messenger.
You've been your presence is requested.
Kind of luring him into this dream world, dream state that in the
You
tower.
Think it was a dream world? I kind of thought it was like outside time and space. I guess we're same diff.
It's all, same diff. But I mean, that's the first like act of the film is him being lured into
the tower. I like that he goes into the tower before we get any sort of backstory about it. Because once he's in there, then the grandmothers start telling his dad what happened. And I really liked that because I was like, oh, so it's not just like random. There is like, there's a reason.
What'd you think of them name dropping the Japanese title and or book? Is it
it's based off a real book. So
a real book.
I did my research. I came more prepared than you today. So the Japanese title of the film is called How Do You Live? Also, in the movie, our main character finds the book from his mother, How Do You Live? This is a book that Hayao Miyazaki read back in like 1940, a real book called How Do You Live? The movie is not based on the book, but it is heavily inspired by, if that makes sense.
And do you know a rough synopsis of the...
So the only things they have in common, because this is what I was looking up, I was like, how much of the story is it? Is that it is about a boy, an upper-class World War II time boy whose father passes away and they move to the countryside. And it is about, I think the similarity really comes into the it's more like, how do you live? Like,
grief?
How do you live with grief? How do you live in the future? How do you want to live? How do you think you should be living? It asks these sort of questions of the main character. And I think this movie does all of that in there. And so I think that's really beautiful that it's not based on it. Like, it's not the same story, but it's a lot of the same themes and metaphors. But it's also not like he just picked this book up and was like, oh, I need to make a movie about this. Like, this was heavily influential in his life from decades ago. Yeah.
Okay.
Highly, highly personal movie, the more you read and see about it. We can go, let's get into it too. We've skipped so much here, but he has personified himself in this movie with a person, the grand uncle or the tower master, played by Mark Hamill in mine.
I mean, there are a couple layers to the grand uncle relationship. There's the one you mentioned where he's making this film. I'm talking outside of the film itself.
Yeah.
He's making this film for his grandchildren. A lot of the interpretations I'm seeing are it's about how he couldn't find a successor to carry on his legacy of Studio Ghibli, of this, you know, this great body of work that he's created. His son, I think, was, I don't know if he worked for Ghibli at some point, but was, you know, is not the heir to Studio Ghibli. I think he sold it to a TV studio.
He did. In 2014, effectively, Studio Ghibli was done. And the only reason they really came back together was before this film, which was going to coincide with the 2020 Japanese Olympics, which obviously COVID and all the delays. And Hayao Miyazaki is 82 years old, so his health was a bit hard making the film at times.
And then another layer of this grand uncle relationship is supposed to represent one of his collaborators, his co-founder, Isao Takahata, who co-founded Ghibli with him, who directed Grave of the Fireflies, but he passed away during the making of the film. And so the story kind of shifted focuses maybe a little bit in the middle of its productions. So he's in a way represented in The Boy and also represented in The Grand Uncle. And The Grand Uncle is a character we haven't talked about yet, but
he's the one who built this world.
Master of the universe, yeah.
He's the master of this universe. He, so there was a meteor that fell on their property. They have a lot of land and created this weird tower. And so he, with his fortune, built a house around the tower. And strange things would happen. And it turns out once you go under the world, there is this whole big magical fantasy world where most of the movie takes place, which is outside of time and space because there are characters that show up to the tower from a different time period.
Does he explain all that backstory when they're on the hill?
Grandmothers do. The grandmothers explain it to us. And all he says is, this is where my power comes from. This is where the universe was created from.
Okay.
And so it is, I mean, it's as him as you can get. He created this, the Grand Tower Master created this phantasmal world with laws and natures. And he tried to make it a just and fair one. But because he's human, his malice, his anger, it slipped in. The world's not always fair. The pelicans eat the wari-wari. The pelicans have nothing else to eat. The pelicans, they tell this sad story of them flying and flying and flying, and they can't leave this place. And it's because they got trapped there in the tower at some point, and then they've been breeding for generations, and there's just nowhere else for them to go, and they don't understand. And the pelicans, like, are children. They're forgetting how to fly, talking about the evolutionary, like, impact of this world. It's not all fair. It's not all just, even though there was someone who was trying to make it that way. He just couldn't get it to all balance properly, and it's represented in these toy blocks that are, like, white ivory. They and it's just, this is where the film really started getting interesting to me, was when the Tower Master showed up.
Yeah. So is the tower a nexus of different worlds, or is it a nexus in time?
I thought it was a nexus in time, but just because we specifically get people from
different times.
We get Kiriko, is that her name? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the grandmother who comes with us. Her younger self lived here for a number of years. That's why she also wants to keep the young master away. She knows what's there. She knows the whole time because she lived there for a long time. And also his mother, Himi, lived there for a very long time. In fact, the only reason she ended up leaving was because she met him. It's good. So, because the grandmas tell this tale to the old man, and it gives you some info that you needed before, and it gives you some info that you'll need later. But the mother went missing for a whole year, and she came back looking the exact same age as when she left. And it was because she was in the movie, the events taking place the whole time.
Okay, maybe I do need to watch the dub, because between dozing off for a little bit and just not having to read everything.
You were doing homework, bro. I was enjoying this phantasmal land.
Okay. What are we, like, 5 for 5 on time travel and or multiversal stuff?
It's spooky.
In the back and Q4 of 2020.
It's unreal. The one that really, I don't want to say, like, disappointed me, but I was just like, I texted you just so defeated. Invincible season 2 is dealing with the multiverse. I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. But I mean, this is case in point of how you do it well.
Yes.
It's not about any of that. It's not about any of the logic of it. It's about how the emotional themes play through.
And he gets to have the meal with his mother where, in classic Ghibli film, we get some beautiful food scenes, her cutting the bread, the butter, and then the jam spilling all over the edges and all over his face. And I was like, it's the most beautiful piece of toast and jam I've ever seen. I need to eat it right now. And he goes, it's just like my mom made. It was so interesting. They were dancing around it. It almost made me feel like I was dumb and that I was like, man, maybe they're not mother, son. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, at that age, you probably don't have never thought of your parents as children,
as a child,
and
before.
Who they are as people.
Also,
it is very humanizing in that way, and not in the animal human comparison I was making earlier, where humans are ugly and humanity is ugly. But I don't know. It's very reflective. This whole film is very reflective. Which
you forget your parents are human. They're not these perfect people who are that know right and wrong and have no malice and whatnot. She's just a human, and she makes mistakes, and she tries to help people. And what I love about this movie is we finally get some more positive firebender representation in Himi, who really interesting. Her first scene, she comes on and she's shooting fireworks at all the pelicans, and it's really fun watching her travel. And like I said, here's some of the laws that don't make sense. Like, her fire hurts bad things, but then her and Mahito, I'm so sorry. They travel through the fire, and it takes them to her house in the fireplace. Just a gorgeous scene. And so, like, the fire hurts some things, the paper, it'll burn, but it doesn't burn any of their clothes. But, like, I loved all the fire animation. What?
You were really tripped up by the fire retardant clothes.
No, it didn't. But it didn't hurt them either. It didn't burn them. They weren't like, but the pelicans got burned when it hit them.
Yeah.
So, like, there's...
It's magic. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying, though. I liked it. It was almost like, it's like friendly fire when she wants it to be.
Yeah. Why would she want to tear them? She's a powerful sorceress.
She was taking out pelicans, dude, left and right. She was like, bam.
They're different. Hey, they're different spells. How about that?
Sure. I'll take it. I'll take it.
One's a transportation spell.
I get it. I understand, Mr. D&D. Okay. All right. So Himi really helps Mahito find Nezuko. And a lot of this is, like, he does not really even like Nezuko that much, but a lot of this is...
Natsuko,
thank you. He does not even like Natsuko that much. He like wouldn't go see her when everyone was telling her, like, hey, she's really sick. That was like such a real moment, though. Like, he was just like, I don't want to go. He's like, it's sad and depressing. I don't want to go visit her. And everyone's like, you really
but also
need to go see
visiting
her.
Is just in another room in this house he lives in.
Super inconveniencing.
Yeah.
It's an estate. It's probably in a different house.
Yeah. True. Plot wise, though. So Mahito moves to this new house in the countryside. Gets lured into this world because gets spirited away because Natsuko, after being falling sick, disappears into the woods.
She's so being summoned as well.
Is going to find her, yeah. And so that's his quest in the tower.
And it's not to me. This is, I guess, what I was saying is while it is a quest to go find his aunt / new mother, it is way more. A quest of like finding, like coming to grief with his mother's death and figuring out how does he live? How does he want to live?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, looking back on it now, like I haven't really even processed all of the thematic things within those relationships in this quest that he's on, but it is dealing with all those relationships. It is how he decides, determines how he wants to live, how he's going to move forward with his new stepmom. And one of the most powerful things in this film is Himi and Mahito find Natsuko. She's in a delivery room because she's pregnant. She's wrapped up in bandages. Paper starts flying around and shit and crazy
shit.
She's
not supposed to enter the birthing room. It's considered bad luck for men to be in there, I guess. There's a tale that a husband came in and the wife turned into a dragon and ate him. And so I think the paper kind of looked a little dragonish, but I think it was supposed to be a little bit to take on that. But this paper is like wrapping them up and it's like trying to get him out of there. It's this really another visually beautiful, stunning scene, but it is very much him accepting her as his new mother.
Yeah, cool. Well, because there's that moment in there where her face, like, her face kind of morphs a little bit, so she looks like his mother mm-hmm. at times, and so her appearance shifts, and then at one point her mood, her tone shifts very abruptly, and she goes, "I hate you."
Yeah.
And I'm almost taking that as not necessarily her, but like that's a reflection of how he feels about her in that moment, or how he has felt about her in the past, because mm-hmm. that's what she represents to him, is this replacement of his mother. And so that's getting reflected back to him by her yelling, "I hate you."
Interesting. That was not exactly what I got from the scene. When she yelled, "I hate
that's
you."
Okay. I was also not listening to it in English.
Stop. Okay. So no, because I don't think my answer's clear cut or great either. I took it mm-hmm. more as like a, get out of here, boy. Like, I don't want you no more. Can't you see? Like, go. I hate you.
Trying to get him out of the room? Or
yes, just trying to get him out. Like, yeah. She's like, I've made my decision. I'm going to give this baby over to the Tower Master, and I'm going to stay here with them.
Oh.
Because the Tower Master needed a successor. He
didn't need an heir.
Needed an heir. And he needed someone that was going to take over this world. So she was gonna sacrifice, because she already knew that he was being drawn to the tower, because mm-hmm. he goes missing. Think about it. Every time he would go missing for more than an hour, they all flipped out, which it makes sense in retrospect, because they know of the tower. And they're like, no, we cannot let him get lost in there. Like, whatever you do, they're like, rule number one, don't let him go in there. And so eventually it got to the point where she was like, okay, I'm sick. I might not live. Like, let me go give my new son over and let them figure out how do they live.
Let them live.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I really need to watch this.
It's good.
I
want to go see it again.
Beat. Yeah.
I really want to go see it again, because I think just what I know now will make it 10 times more entertaining, and like, I'll be like, ooh, I get why this is happening now. Evan and I are wannabe movie critics. We're also wannabe chefs.
We're all doing more cooking at home now. If you want to elevate your home cooking, you need nice tools to do it. Louis Kitchenware will get you there. They have beautiful stainless steel pans, nonstick bakeware, knives, all the stuff you need. Safe, high quality materials, constructed to last, made in the United States. Founded in Detroit.
Moving into my condo, we got hand-me-downs. So this new Louis Kitchenware has been great, and we love the discount. We want to share that with our listeners.
You can use code 2DUDES, that's TWO DUDES, at louiskitchenware.com, and that'll give you 10% off anything on the site.
Check out our link in bio.
Two dudes watch cartoons. Yeah, yeah.
Characters. What characters have we not discussed? There's the. Do you know who played the Parakeet King in my movie without looking it up?
Dave Bautista.
Yeah, it was so good. He was great, dude. He was so good.
The parakeets in general. That's like the final act of the film is breaking into the Parakeet Kingdom.
I totally can't believe I haven't said this, but my favorite thing about the parakeets is they're eating people left and right. And he shows up and he's like, where's my mom? Where's my aunt? Where is she? And they go, she's pregnant. We wouldn't eat her. Like, they have a code.
They have
a code, guys. Relax. They don't eat pregnant women, but you're fair game, kid.
Yeah. Imagine my confusion waking up to a bunch of murderous parakeets. And not knowing what's going on, but still having a hell of a lot of fun with this movie. And that's the perfect encapsulation of kind of his movies, is like, yes, there is this threat. Yes, they are the antagonists at this point. But the film feels so fun at this point for the themes that it's grappling. They're sneaking around the Parakeet Kingdom. The parakeets are kind of these like dopey, like happy, all holding knives and weapons behind their back, all plotting to eat them.
Yeah, and they're going to rat.
This is some of the funnest stuff.
They're going to rat on him because he's the one who entered the birthing room, which is totally taboo. Mm-hmm. It's not allowed. He can't be the successor if he's breaking all these taboo rules, which I find so fascinating, because the Parakeet King is essentially talking to his god. He's like, we have these We have these rites of passage. We have these rules. We have taboos for a reason. This is how society is. And the god's like, whatever you say, the world's going to change. And like, once he takes over, dude, the world's changing. Yeah. Like, you're gone. Like, it's really interesting to me that the parakeet king was like, he'll understand. Like, but like, he was talking to his god and he just totally got swerved. Like, as soon as he left, the old man was like, okay, so do you still want to be the successor?
And so granduncle in the photo in the book kind of looks like, I don't know, it was like a Nikola Tesla type.
Yeah, I see.
Or was that the author of the book? No, that was the picture of the uncle. But then he looks fucking crazy at the end. He looks like Broly from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, that's not bad. But with a mustache, with a big mustache. He's the one who created this world, and he tried to. And the first time he offers him to take over, he's like, I can't. There's malice in those pieces. But like I said, it's just because the god was a human, and you know, all human intentions have a little bit of. It doesn't make them evil. But there is that little bit of hate sometimes, that jealousy, that anger, what have you, that malice. And so he finds his own piece eventually and is like, I guess I could, let me try with these brand new pieces. It doesn't have the taint of anyone's malice. But then in the climactic note of the movie, he realizes, I have malice in me too. I did this to me. I have a scar to remind me of my malice. I can't take over here. I'm flawed too. And there's a lot of Hayao Miyazaki really being like, okay, I guess I'm at peace if this is your decision to not be my successor. Mm-hmm. This is how you live, I guess.
Yeah.
And part of the beauty of my world is because it is how I lived. That's why it's so beautiful, as this was my choice. I didn't want to be a businessman like my dad. I didn't want to be an economic whatever. I chose this world, this life, even the good and the bad and the malice. That's why this world was so beautiful, was because it was how I chose to live. Wow. Yeah, it's great. This is what I'm saying, is like, I left being like, yeah, that was pretty good. And as it's been going, I'm like, I keep doing that.
So in the climax of the film, Mahito turns down the job.
And the parakeet king was like, I'll build it. And she does this like horrible stack, dude. I was like, dude, you saved the worst piece for the top.
Yeah, they're like little Jenga blocks. They're like play blocks you have as a kid. But if the tower of blocks falls, the world collapses.
Yeah.
And so they have to escape at the very end. And Mahito has to
go back to his time and to his family, and he has to deal with the rest of his life how he deals with this grief with his new mom. But what's really great is this whole adventure, Himi was gonna stay there. This was the life she chose. But meeting Mahito, having this experience with him, she's like, no, I'm gonna choose a different life. I need to go live so I can be your mother one day. And it's love time travel. I love that shit.
That part was incredible.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a sap, but as a new parent, when she goes, I have to go to my time now. Like, you're a good boy. Oh, what the fuck? You're a good boy. I have to go be your mother now. And that really, I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just thinking about your future, thinking about parents, who your parents were and all their hopes and dreams and who, you know, your kid is and how will they live? How do they live?
I think about it. His granduncle, that really hit home for me. What I really liked is his granduncle has no direct relation to Mahito, but he's still like asking so much of him, because that's what we do with our lineage. Even generations away from us, we're still asking them on to carry on our name, carry on our tradition. And that's this guy who he didn't even know was asking him to give up his whole life in reality.
Yeah.
Granted, it was a pretty crummy life. I thought there was a chance he might take it. He was like,
it's enticing.
It was enticing. And so it's just so good. He like came. He's way more wise than I was at that age. Like, I'd be like, yeah, I'm staying. Sure. Let's do it. Teach me.
Yeah. How do two dudes pass on to the next generation. You
exactly.
know? The empire that we've built.
Exactly. Exactly.
The media conglomerate we've built with our there own was, two hands.
There was a bit of, no, Dad, that's your dream in there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is what he has to sort of grapple with his own son. Although I imagine his son wanted to take over, but
I don't think
I think there's
the case.
A bit of a fraught relationship.
I think it was, yeah, it's something about his grandson. Like, maybe one day you'll take this on, but if you don't, this to me, I know he's making another film. This feels very good as a last film, in my opinion. And that's why I'm okay still calling it a last film, because even though it's not going to be his last film, it was made with the intention that, like, this is the capstone of my work. Even though it's not going to be, I think it's good to know intentions. Like, how did we get here? It really makes a difference on, you know, the message of the movie.
Agreed. Yeah, I hope it's not his last film.
It's not. But he said he's working. Well, it's at least not the last one he's written.
I mean, timeline. Like, it'll mortality.
They will still put it out there, and it'll be like Hayao Miyazaki and so-and-so written by.
True.
But he won't be the director. You're right. So, no, like I said, this feels good as his last film, though. I'm very content calling it that, like, in a good way.
So where does the film leave off? Everyone returns their own time. Mahito has chosen how he wants to live and like, accept Natsuko as his mother.
Yeah.
Come to terms with the death of his own mother.
Yeah.
Himi goes on to go live a life and grow up to be his mom.
And you know what she says at the end that's so beautiful? He was like, I can't let you go back there. You're going to die. She goes, I'm not scared of fire.
Yeah. She's like, I got fireproof clothes. I'm not scared of fire.
It's beautiful, though. Good joke. That was a great joke. But it's such a beautiful moment.
I love that. I saw some people in the Reddit thread I was reading, like, didn't love the end of the film. They're like, it was too abrupt. It was one person. It was like one
person. I love
but
when we do that.
It ends. The heron is at the end of the film as well. And the heron goes, it's best that you, like, forget this now.
Oh,
like,
yeah. And so his mother forgot their encounter because they mentioned, the old ladies mentioned in their story, she came back not remembering a thing of where she was. So you're supposed to forget when you do leave, but he pocketed a couple of things. The old lady token, he took something from the world so it still exists. He still got the memory of it.
Well, the old lady token was
the old lady, but he also took a block that he picked up off the ground.
True. Okay.
So this to me, oh my God, I would have been so mad if we skipped over this, because this was one where I thought the same thing. I was like, I guess it's weird that he just brought something back so he remembered. Like, it wasn't even significant. But if you think about stories and themes and movies and all this, the way they live on, the way you remember them is because you take something from it. You take something with it and you carry it with you. And as long as you have that life lesson, that theme, that moment you remember, you'll have the memories of the world. It's so simple. They don't address it, but it's fucking beautiful. It's like, it's such a great wrap up because, like I said, the whole world is a metaphor for his filmography, if you will. His mystical worlds he's created, his stories. And it's like you will remember it if you take something from it.
This is a quick bit from the New York Times review. Miyazaki, they're talking about how the film is obviously autobiographical, and Miyazaki has said in interviews how a lot of his early memories involved fear and war, and there's a lot of stuff in there that he doesn't want to remember.
It's
obviously very painful times, and so even just that, like, that block representing, like, what he's taking from his childhood, the fantasy, the escapism and all that.
Great way to say escapism.
That's how you pronounce it.
I don't know. I guess I don't know. Say it again.
Escapism?
I love it. That's beautiful. I don't know it's correct, but it's amazing.
If I'm right, I get to lord over Two Dudes Watch Cartoons for the next millennia. And if you're right, it's all yours.
Like Scott Pilgrim, I'll fight you for it. Okay.
Yeah.
The empire is mine now. wow, that is... but I think that's a beautiful sentiment. Like, what he's choosing to take from it all is sort of that that childlike wonder, the positive of it. Even though he couldn't get all the blocks to balance at times, he's still going to...
And even though there's malice.
Even though there is malice, he's going to choose to remember the child. Some of these movies... you could show to a kid. I could definitely see some parents not wanting to, but I think there's a lot there for children that they'll probably take with them for the rest of their life. How many people, our most viral TikTok, Graveyard of the Fireflies, the I knew I said it wrong. I'm so sorry. Okay. The point is beautiful, so I'm going to start it all over. Yeah. Grave of the Fireflies, our most viral TikTok. The number one comment is, I've seen this movie once, and that was enough to scar me, remember it for life, what have you. And that's so powerful. I'm like not thinking about it till we're really thinking about this peace situation. Is some people just threw this on because they saw Spirited Away and it was fun and there's all these cool things, and or they saw Kiki's and so they're like, oh, I'll watch this one too. And it's like, whoa, this is not the same sort of message content. And these people were like, it stuck with me for the rest of my life after one viewing several years ago.
Yeah, and that's the power of
film. That's the power of the film. Dude, we should be movie critics. This shit is, are we? We're amateur movie critics. This shit is awesome.
We're pros.
We're pros.
We got a million, 2 million hits.
We're pros after today. We just became professionals. Yeah. We leveled up mid-podcast, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I think, what stands out about Ghibli stuff, though, is I'd make the argument that you could show this to kids, you know,
this
seven,
one, yes,
eight, and
yes,
up.
I agree.
No, I would make that argument for any of them.
Any of them? You would show Grave of the Fireflies to a 7-year old?
Yeah, if they
wanted to. You're savage. You're savage.
Because it teaches.
I'm saying
them
10
about
minimum.
Okay, 10. Yes, 10.
I'm not a parent. You show it to Sale now.
All right, I'm throwing it out tomorrow. He's watched a lot of One Piece and a lot of Real Housewives so far.
Does he have a favorite show yet?
He pays attention to Real Housewives.
He loves the Real Housewives. Wow.
We noticed particularly.
Sorry, go ahead.
I lost Alex in the Speed Force for a second. We had Real Housewives of New Jersey on today, and he was like intently looking at it, and I was like, that's probably because like his mother's has brown hair.
He's like, grandma,
you know, is Italian.
Grandma
heritage.
That's funny. He's like, I know her. He's like, I know that woman.
What was I gonna say? Yeah, 10 and up. 10
okay,
and up is
10's
kids.
Fine. 7 feels low.
Seven is first grade. I'm talking,
okay,
10 and up.
You know what? Okay, so first grade's not terrible. I was thinking it was a little younger, honestly. Okay, I get what you're saying, though. You're not afraid to show it to someone who's not an adult.
Because it teaches them, it portrays beautifully the complexities and the nuances of the world. Nothing in these films is ever black and white.
So true.
It's not good versus evil. And it makes, like, it forces you to sort of ponder these things. I imagine if it's evoking a lot of questions out of us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What would a child come out of it with? Seeing the Parakeet King be the villain, you know? And you could read it from a childlike perspective in that way where he's a bad guy, they're running away from
him.
And you can get that enjoyment out of it. But, you know, as they get a little bit older, they can see that he's just trying to do right by
the pelicans too. I think are a great example. We're introduced to them eating souls, the wari-wari, as they're floating to the world above. And then the next scene we get with them is Willem Dafoe being like, put me out of my misery. This world is cruel and I'm no longer.
Can you explain the wari-wari a little bit?
It's the wari-wari.
They're souls.
Yeah, the wari-wari.
That are not born yet.
Our souls that are not born yet. So what this man, the Tower Master, has done by justifying the good in his world is he's sending souls to the world above. He's the reason for the population boom. No, I'm just kidding. So he is sending souls of the unborn to the world above, and he's
jerking them off.
So he is that's the justification of his world, was that this is the good he's doing, but there is a lot of malice. There's a lot of bad. There's the parakeets eating people. There's the pelicans eating the souls. But like I said, everything's not black and white, because then we instantly get the pelicans' perspective of like, we're trapped here. We have nowhere to go, nothing to eat. We fly for miles and miles and there's nothing. We end up right back here. Put me out of my misery. Like really grim, dark stuff where you're like, oh, the Pelicans aren't the bad guys here. Yeah, they busted him through the gate of death or whatever, and they're very Finding Nemo Pelicans, where they're like, my, or that's not the Pelicans, but the seagulls are very, like, they're swarming them, but once you talk to the one, you quickly realize, like, this is not their fault. This is...
Exactly.
This is just how the
world's complex.
Yeah. So I love the Wari Wari. They're literally the background on my phone right now. Like, I'm obsessed with these little guys. Look at them. Me and Nikki, they would wave, and me and Nikki would like wave back at them. We're like, oh my God, hi. They were so fucking cute.
It's like a brief moment, but I do love at the end when all of the pelicans, all the birds, everything
fly through the door.
Fly through the door back to the real world, Mahito's real world. They turn into, you know, normal birds. So the large parakeets that are human size turn into beautiful parakeets that flutter out. And it's a small detail, but the birds start shitting all over Natsuko and
all and over
Mahito. And it's a joyous moment. They're not like, oh, but like Mahito just soaks it in. He's like, oh, like I'm home. Yep. And like
his dad, all these and things the
that were trying to murder
are,
us are like,
they're no longer scary. They're no longer...
Yeah, they're no longer scary.
Yeah, because he knows how to deal with them a little better. And they've transformed, but...
And they're shitting on him.
And they're shitting on him still. One last act for the parakeets is they lose all their power. They're like...
Before he forgets.
Yeah, before he's supposed to forget everything that happened to him. But he took it out. What a great film. Like I said, I feel like... We could watch this again and come back and almost do a whole new podcast and like talk about different things. Like it's one of those films that I'm now that we've podcast about it, I've extended the shelf life of how long it's going to live in my brain. I'm going to be thinking about it for the next couple weeks.
This one is definitely a thinker. I'm trying to think if we've watched anything that has made like I've come out as reflective about.
I felt very similarly when I came into Spirited Away. I was like, I was like, oh my God, connecting all the, and then this means that, and then this is a representation of that.
Porco Rosso. Okay.
Yeah, it's Ghibli, baby. It's Ghibli.
Yeah.
There was something we watched recently that we were like, the more we talked about it, was it Scott? Maybe I'm thinking of Scott. The more we talked about it, the more we were like, this is brilliant.
Could have been, maybe. All right. How about we do some Letterboxd reviews and then give our score?
Let's do it.
In our segment called Hotboxed, you know, we got to do a better job of explaining what the segments are to anyone who's joining us by episode and not just jumping right in. Hotboxed is a segment where we read through, you know, what people are saying about the movie or show on Letterboxd, hot takes and Letterboxd reviews.
And then we give our score as well.
Yeah. Hot takes on Letterboxd. Something in there is the description of the
this
segment.
This is why we don't introduce them. What do you got?
I haven't looked at. I'm just pulling.
You haven't looked at any? Okay, I got one right here. Okay, it says, this one just says, Miyazaki is so fucking sad that his son can't draw, bro. So, good summary of the film right there.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not shade, but I think there's a little bit of maybe acceptance and maybe hoping for forgiveness. 4.5 stars, Ethan writes, greatly exceeded my expected freaky little bird count, and I couldn't be happier about it. This film was a lot of fun. The birds were great, and they get more fun as you go on.
So many birds. In my opinion. So many birds. Mm-hmm. And the parakeets were just like visually really fun, like you said, and they were people eaters. This is so funny. I hadn't seen this till just now, but I said the same thing. Danny DeVito as the heron for the Broadway version, please.
Yeah, that's good casting. 4 stars. Baby Chips writes, gorgeous movie, lovely movie, but weird as fuck. Like, weirdest Ghibli movie ever, actually. ? Also, I'd let young Kiriko hit.
Not this.
She had a very commanding presence, I'd say, if you're, you know, if that's your vibe.
Yeah. Man, how about when they were gutting the fish? That was such a beautiful scene.
Oh, that was. I wanted to be in there gutting that fish, too.
I did, too, and I don't even like, No. Okay, 4.5 stars. Hayao Miyazaki titling a movie about his own relationship with his son and his work. How do you guys live? Like, it does sometimes feel like, oh, how are you going to live, I guess?
Mic drop.
Yeah.
This is how I feel about you, future, my future heirs.
This is the last thing I'm going to do on Earth. Someone said, could have had more birds. It's good.
I mean, it's got a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe.
Wow.
The aggregate on
We hate Rotten Letterboxd. Tomatoes as much as we mention it every single podcast.
I know. The aggregate is 4 stars. That's hard to believe on Letterboxd.
I get that. No, I'm going to be honest. I totally get that because, like I said, coming out of the film, my rating would have been lower.
Yeah.
I think it depends on when people rate it. Like, if you're doing it in your movie theater seat in the credits, people are going to be like, I was confused.
So, to turn the question on you, how do you live with this movie on Letterboxd as a scale of 1 to 5, or 0 to 5?
24 hours gave this movie a whole star bump up. And I'm giving it a 4.5 out of 5. I think it was a little long. There were a couple points that were a bit confusing, but overall, this is such, like, if it could have been a little tighter, neatly packed, I think it would be clear 6 out of 5. Like, there's so many strong animation, so many strong themes, so many thinkums. Like you said, no clear villain. It's that gray area of good and evil, malice in all humans. It just, like I said, I haven't really thought so much about a project that we've talked about so long after thinking or after watching it and just been like, oh yeah, and that makes sense with X, Y, and Z. So just really blown away. If you've made it this far and haven't watched it, go fucking watch it.
The movie's runtime 2 hours.
I don't know. I just felt like it was a little longer than two. I could be wrong. I'm team under 2 hours now. I am. I'm strong. I'm gonna be more critical about it, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
I think 2 hours is the max. Sorry, go on.
Yeah. Yeah. The last movie experience I had, movie theater experience I had, was Killers of the Flower Moon, and that shit was long.
You were like, oh, this was a quick hour 15 movie, I guess. Yeah.
I think I only survived because I read the book, and it's a really great book. Also a really great film. Mm. Could have been tighter. This, I felt, was great. Yes, 2 hours is a little bit long.
He needs that slice of life, though. We didn't talk about it, but he loves.
It needs the slice of life. And it doesn't cut corners. Everything adds to it. Yes, it could have done with less, but I appreciate everything that's in this film.
I get you. Yeah.
Like, I've only begun since talking about it with you to unpack, like, really what he's trying to convey in this movie. I hadn't really known the connection to of it being, you know, about his relationship with his son, or like, I knew it's sort of about his body of work, and it's semi-autobiographical. This movie is a lot of fun. It's a lot to ponder. Mm. It'll make you question, how do you want to live? Yeah. I think I'm going to land at a 4.5. I want to give it a 5 because it is such a joyous experience. And I leave it with, like, I left the theater feeling like this is why you go to the movies. Mm.
Yeah.
Watching them sneak around Parakeet Kingdom, I was like, this shit fucking rocks.
Inverse
dude.
Of that, I really enjoyed the Parakeet King sneaking up on them for so long, like following
that
them.
That was so fun.
And you're like,
okay,
how do you not see him behind that pole? Like, it was great. I loved it.
Yes. There's so much cartoony shit in this.
Oh, the funniest part of the, you know what I mean? Funniest part of the whole movie is our first introduction to any cartoony shit. The gray heron flies to the tower for the first time, sticks his head in the hole, and then whoop, and like, it was so funny.
Yeah, there's
and
also a lot of...
And then he peeks out. Like, you just see his eye.
There's some funny stuff with Kiriko in the beginning when she's an old lady and she's...
The smokes.
Like fiending for a cigarette. I don't know. Like, yeah. There's slice of life stuff built in. 4.5. Like, only good things to say about this movie. Yeah. It's such a joy to take in. And I honestly do feel lucky and privileged to have been able to have gotten to see what I've... You know, the little I've seen of Hayao Miyazaki's work I have in my lifetime, but just to be able to say I was alive while like this master of the form was alive, and to take it in a theater setting.
Yeah,
granted, not the best theater.
You're gonna go again,
I had, but
you
that's
are.
Not Hayao Miyazaki's fault. 4.5 feels solid.
Yeah,
I think you'll enjoy. I think anyone who's listening to this pod,
if you've made it this far,
you're
gonna like
listens
it.
To our pod, you'll probably like this. So yeah, 4.5. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, no, that's
also good. If you love the time travel-y, timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff.
And it's not like the focus of the story. It's a very, oh,
but it's fun.
It's great.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fun.
I know. Yeah. I'm all about it.
I'm jazzed.
Yeah. No, I totally get you. That's what we're here to do, though. We're here to talk about and appreciate animation.
Okay.
News?
What do we got? Let's talk some news. I don't have anything for the Zazz segment, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, they haven't made a bonehead decision. Fiona and Cake has been renewed for season 2. Not going to lie, I was pretty surprised by that. I didn't expect that. It felt very self-contained, but we're going to get a second season. I thought that was interesting.
I don't know what they'll do because the show left it in a good spot. Do you think they'll...
But I feel like I felt that about every Adventure Time spinoff. I'm like, huh, what are they going to do?
Do you think it'll be exploring the multiverse more? Exploring their own world? Or a balance of both?
I don't have a good guess for you, if I'm being honest. I could see either way. I'm thinking multiverse still. I'm thinking it's got to be the multiverse. But who knows?
Okay.
Cartoon-based award...
Whatever it is. I think whatever it is, it'll surpass our expectations. It'll... turn our expectations upside down. I think we'll be
elevate. Surprised. It's going to elevate the series as a whole. There's cartoon based award nominees for animated series of the decade so far: Arcane, Invincible, The Owl House, Fiona and Cake, and Scavenger's Reign. Now, I've never seen Scavenger's Reign. We have seen the others though and talked about them. Have you ever watched Owl House? I'm guessing you haven't.
I started a couple episodes because you wanted it to cover it on the pod, and I had not made it past a couple episodes.
Okay, I think you should revisit that. But yeah, this is the same issue I had with Gravity Falls. It's the same creators, and you just need to, you have to trust me more than anything, because
I do.
You will have to go through a bit of a slog, if that makes sense. You have to get through.
I'll cut a deal with you right now.
Oh, okay. What?
Shrek 3 for Owl House, Paddington 2 for... Gravity Falls.
Wow.
That's a great deal on your
end. I was going to say, I feel I'm winning on this deal.
You get to watch two 90-minute movies.
Okay, yeah. I think we could, well, let's virtually shake on this. I like this deal.
Okay.
We'll work on this.
I think Shrek 3 is good for
75. I don't know why I want to make that our next four projects, but that could be a 2024 goal. Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah. No, 75 is Shrek.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is coming up. It's coming up.
Oh, yeah, it kind of is. That's right. Okay. I'm into that. Oh, my God, wait, is it 25 and then 50? That's Shrek 1 and Shrek 2? There's no way. Why are you saying 75?
50 was then... Puss in Boots.
So... I bet 25 is Shrek then. Why else are you saying 75?
I don't think so. It's just a nice sounding.
You just want to do the milestone, you know? Of Shrek 3?
And 50. Yeah.
I thought there was like a reason.
Is Shrek 4.
I thought there was like a bigger reason. But no,
are
okay.
You looking at the. I'll look at the.
I'm looking numbers. Right now. I'm looking. It was not. It was not even close.
Okay. I didn't have this idea until we did like 50 as possible.
Okay.
There's only two more entries in the
range. There's going to be five. Five's coming.
I know, that'll be 200.
I'm going to owe you a steak dinner. That'll be 200, he said. Okay, I see your timeline actually adds up because it's not coming out anytime soon. Good math.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
I got one.
Go ahead.
You sent this one to me. James Cameron's next Avatar film will not, in fact, be called Avatar the Seed Bearer.
Thank God.
Jimmy boy.
I don't even know what to think, dude. Why was that ever even in contention? And of course, the movie's almost done. And so here's what's tough is I feel like James Cameron's a man who it's kind of hard to change his mind. So like who got in there and was like, this is not a good name, James?
Probably his grandson was like, bro...
Don't do that, Grandpa.
Grandpa, they're roasting it, man. They're roasting it.
Pulled up Urban Dictionary. Okay.
The worst part is it was definitely like a semen reference. Like, there's no way it's not.
Yeah. Well, I think in world, it's probably a reference to the trees or whatever
that
they plug their tails into.
Nah.
Here's this one. Neither of us have sent to each other. Maybe you did, and I didn't read
it. That's fine. Go ahead.
Netflix is actively working on their live-action My Hero Academia adaptation.
crazy news.
I thought I'd seen something.
Yu Hakusho comes out, coming out Thursday. It'll be out by the time this episode's out.
Should we do that in the news?
I said that too. Yes.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, dude. Oh. Yes.
But did you know about My Hero Academia?
This morning I found out. Yeah, I don't think I sent it to you, though. Yeah, crazy. I didn't know before this morning that they were doing that. I am still in camp cautious because, like, for the most part, anime live adaptations are not good, but the One Piece one has restored my faith.
But with My Hero, there's a little more special effects wise that
probably
they might
needed
need to accomplish.
There's
going to
be a lot of Luffy gum
gum. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, you're so right. Well, I'm excited regardless. I love My Hero. Okay.
Yeah.
Good news. I'm glad you shared. Anything else? You got anything else now?
That's all I got for now.
Great movie. Great podcast, too.
Great movie.
You know, it's a good podcast. You wrap up and I'm like, oh, that was good. Okay. I'm going to wrap us up, though, for real now. If you are loving the podcast, please go check out our old episodes on Apple, Spotify, also on YouTube. We're really trying to grow our YouTube. Please go follow, like our videos, do what you got to do there to help us out. Follow us at Two Dudes Watch Cartoons, all one word, on Instagram and TikTok. And don't forget to leave a rate and review wherever you're listening. And thanks for being with us. We're having a good... we're wrapping up the year here. I don't know if this is our last podcast of the year or not, but, like, what a great year we've had regardless. I'm just...
what a great year.
We chose to live really good this year. We did great things. You made a child. It's amazing.
We lived lives this year on the pod.
We did.
We covered some great shit.
We covered some all-time shit. It was good. Great year. I'm excited for another year.
Hey, let's set some intentions for how we're going to live. In 2024,
what do you got
on this pod specifically?
Yeah, you have anything?
Maybe. I don't know.
I got mine because it's a daily lifely goal. So maybe I need to put it out in the universe more. I'm going to be more proactive. I am not going to be lazy. I am not going to be reactive. I am going to grab life by the bull horns and ride it, or whatever they say.
I like that. How am I going to live in the new year? I'm going to live, I think I need to be more present.
Mm.
You know, I think I'm always working towards what's next.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'm always working on the next pod.
Yeah, you know? That's true. Bi-weekly.
Next two dudes, bi-weekly. Being more present.
I like that.
And, letting myself live and breathe a little bit easier.
Mm. Love that.
Okay. Other than the stuff we've already talked about potentially covering, any like things you're looking forward to in the new year to watch, whether or not we cover it?
Oh, well, I mean, just off the top of mind, Dune 2. I don't know why. That's the first thing that came to mind. No animation involved at all.
There was that headline going around where Denis Villeneuve said he's already feeling like Dune 2 is going to be better than Dune 1.
I said that already. When I had like gotten away from Dune 1 far enough, I was like, you know what? A lot of that was set up. Like, Dune 2 is going to be better. It's like Catching Fire. Catching Fire is like 10 times better than The Hunger Games, the first one.
Is that the part one of the last?
No, Catching Fire is two, the quarter two. Quell.
Okay.
Episode 75 of The Hunger Games.
How you know the...
Before, I just saw the new Hunger Games, and I had watched a couple of them before I went and saw the new one.
Okay.
A really good series. I'm actually like a very big fan the more I watch them, if I'm being honest.
They were quality movies. I don't know that I ever finished that series. Anyways, I'm meandering. I got to answer this question that I posed myself.
Yeah.
What? Shit, I don't even know. I don't know.
Don't ask questions you don't have an answer to.
I'm not prepared to answer this question.
You can't do that. Well, okay. How anticlimactic.
I'm looking forward to watching Inside Out 2.
Get the fuck out of here. I cannot believe you just said that to me. I know you're mildly looking forward to it, but that is not top of your list. You just aren't prepared for a question you asked.
I know.
I already wrapped us up, dude. What are we doing here?
All right. That'll do it for this episode of Two Dudes Watch Cartoons. We will catch you next time. I was just trying to end on a reflective holiday mood,
I know. I liked it.